Naomi's day. That charming bastard! Where did he find a bouquet of roses? Phelan sighed as she looked at the blue roses in the vase on the kitchen table. Naomi had left a few hours ago with Ash. She was excited for her. The more time she spent with Naomi, the more she knew she would fit well into the family. She was very sweet, even if she was also very naive. The two of them bonded last night as she helped her prepare for the date today. She wished her the best, but she was also a little envious.
"I'm sure he'll get you some next time he takes you out, sis, especially if you mention it to him."
Luna responded from the couch. She was playing some video game where she was a cowboy and spent most of her time roping people and placing them on train tracks. Phelan had watched her play for a bit but was already getting bored. She was debating if she should make a video as Ember or just play some games of her own on the computer. Neither was appealing to her right now. She wanted Ash.
"We do need to go on another date soon. I kinda messed up the last one where I went as Ember. Just sucks waiting my turn."
Luna rolled her eyes, which Phelan only caught because she looked her way.
"What's with the eye rolls?"
Luna paused her game and gave Phelan a look.
"You get dates and dick, I get depression in my fingers. Sorry you have to wait a day or two to get wine dined and fucked, sis."
Phelan grimaced.
"I did not need the mental image of you hitting the kitten, Luna."
"Consider it payback for you making every room smell like sex in the house. I could even tell you two fucked in the shower when I went to use it yesterday."
Phelan blushed at getting busted.
"Well, he has his own place now, so that won't happen again. Probably."
There was a knock at the door. Phelan's entire demeanor shifted as she got a scent of who was on the other side of it. She swung the door open with a scowl on her face.
"What do you want?"
Cowering before her were a few of Ray's lackeys. She had originally told them that she would kill any of them she caught in the district after she had killed Ray. Only for several of them to end up in the trolls' clutches as slaves, and back in the district when she and Ash had freed them. She allowed them to live in the district, but it was tenuous at best, and they knew it.
"We wanted you to know it wasn't us,"
Linda, a lynxkin, said with flat ears.
"You can give us a truth potion if you want. We will gladly take it."
A jackalkin named Brooke added with her tail tucked under her. Phelan crossed her arms. She had already pulled on her earth magic and was ready to unleash spells on the two of them if this was some kind of trap or trick.
"What are you talking about?"
Phelan asked, narrowing her eyes. The two looked at each other and gulped.
"Someone dug up Ray. We don't know who, just that there's a hole in the ground where you buried her. Bruce and Cole fled the district, but I don't think it was them. They were with us when we saw it this morning,"
Linda answered. Phelan sneered.
"If they're innocent, why did they run?"
Brooke was the one who answered.
"They were part of the group that tried to mug Storm and his orc friend on Ray's orders. They figured this might draw his attention to them, and if he recognized him, they were dead."
The Storm took Phelan a second to register as Ash. She had heard a few of those they rescued use the term to describe him, but never as a moniker. This was also the first time someone had used it in a conversation with her. Phelan's eyes hardened, and Brooke flinched.
"Why the hell did they even stay in the district if they were worried Ash would kill them if he ever saw them?"
Phelan knew Ash would never be that bloodthirsty, but she wasn't going to tell that to these traitors.
"We fucked up badly. The gangs all watch us closely, knowing that we're traitors. Word's even spreading around the district that Ray was selling people into slavery and that we were loyal to her. We are despised and outcasts, but this is still our home. We have family here. Also, Jacqueline is a beacon of hope. She was one of us and even crossed the storm by wrecking his bike, but she's not an outcast. She's actually on friendly terms with both the storm and you. The rest of us hope we can earn such a redemption with time.
Linda said, with her ears still flat.
Jacqueline apologized to both me and Ash. She has also been striving every day to make amends for all the damage she has done. Time won't earn you redemption. You need to work for it.
So, someone dug up the bitch. Why?
Luna asked, no longer playing her game.
That's what I'm about to find out. And these two are going with me.
Phelan said, giving Brooke and Linda a look that brokered no argument.
I'll tag along,
Luna said as she hopped off the couch. Phelan was about to protest, but she knew that would just spur Luna on. Having Luna close by where Phelan could protect her was probably better than leaving her home alone without protection.
Fine, but you will listen to me and do everything I say, especially if a fight breaks out.
Luna nodded and grabbed her jacket. Phelan had been very protective of her since she came back into her life, but Luna was no pushover. The sisters had survived the wilds of Voss together. Phelan took out her phone and shot a text to Celeste, telling her to keep the 114 pack on alert. She almost sent one to Ash, but she didn't want to interrupt his date with Naomi. Linda and Brooke followed a few steps behind them and never said a word. Luna wouldn't shut up for the entire trip to the empty lot. She kept trying to think of reasons someone would dig up Ray, and most of the reasons she thought of had Phelan worried that too many video games had rotted her sister's brain. There was indeed a hole in the empty lot that had served as Ray's grave. No effort had been made to cover it up or fill it in. Dirt was thrown haphazardly everywhere, and Ray's body was definitely gone.
They weren't trying to hide it. Even chain-smoked while they dug her up, the litter bug.
Luna said as she pointed to a few cigarette buds on the ground. Phelan bent down and picked one up. The butt of the cigarette had a picture of a rose with black petals.
Linda, Brooke, do either of you recognize this brand?
Phelan asked as she passed the cigarette end to them.
Obsidian Rose,
Brooke answered right away. Phelan figured she would know. The Jackalkin had kicked the nasty habit a few months ago. Phelan had even treated her out to dinner at May's Den when she made her first month without the death sticks. Phelan grimaced at the memory. The night had been a fun one, but now it was a bitter memory. The knife of betrayal does that.
Know anyone that smokes them?
Phelan growled, the anger of her memory slipping through to her voice. Brooke shook her head.
No, not a common brand around here. Our district normally gets European brands. This one is a rather small American brand.
Sis, we got company.
Luna's voice had an edge. A blood-covered coal was approaching them. The male wolfkin had not left the district like Linda and Brooke had suggested. He held a long metal pry bar in his hands. Phelan quickly checked Linda and Brooke. They both looked as surprised as Phelan was by the arrival of the armed wolfkin.
Cole? What the hell are you doing?
Linda shouted.
Cole, you take one more step towards me armed with that pry bar and I will put you down,
Phelan warned. The warning was ignored, so Phelan pulled on her magic and formed a spike of earth. She shot it straight through where Cole's heart was, leaving a bloody hole in its place. Cole staggered backward. Then, with a hole where his heart had been, started towards them again. Phelan cursed and drew in the scent of Cole. She got a strong smell of death on him. The blood that was covering him was his own. Cole was already dead. Linda was a step quicker with the discovery and shouted,
"He's a zombie!"
Her next earth spike went through his head, and he dropped to the ground like a sack of rocks.
She then used a fireball to set the body on fire, just to be safe. Some of the more powerful undead could even function without a head, or even use magic to rebuild their bodies. Phelan pulled out her phone and started typing a text. This was bad, and she needed to mobilize everyone as soon as possible. She sent a mass text out to everyone on her contact list. Phelan.
Necromancer somewhere in district. Undead are attacking.
Linda let out a scream and started backing away, her face full of fear. Phelan turned and saw Ray standing before her, a malevolent smile on her unnaturally pale face.
Hello again, Phelan,
Ray said. Chapter 25. Ash thought his and Naomi's date was going very well, though he owed part of that to the girls who had been at the slumber party with Naomi. Counting Jacqueline's suggestion to Beau about the flowers, every attendant to the slumber party had sent him advice or suggestions of where to take Naomi on their date. The cheerful salamander girl had a lot of people in her corner. The first stop on the date had been suggested by Luna. She had sent him a text saying that Naomi seemed very interested in the beach where Ash and Phelan would practice magic together. Though he would say practicing together was a stretch. They just stood as far apart from each other as possible and still be within spell range of the rusted cargo ship. That was then. Now he was sure Phelan would be right next to him, if not on top of him, with how secluded the spot could be. Naomi seemed excited about the idea, and clung tightly to his arm as the two of them walked along the beach to the cargo ship. They hurled spells at the old ship for a few minutes, and Ash was impressed by Naomi's ice magic. Her preferred offensive spell was an ice shard that froze a few inches around whatever it pierced. However, it became clear to him that she was not that interested in magic practice. Naomi's eyes kept drifting towards the rocky area along the beach by the cargo ship. At first, he thought someone was over there and she was keeping an eye on them. Once he figured out there was no one there, he realized it was the water drawing her attention. She had never been to the ocean before. Ash asked her if she wanted to explore the tidal pools by the rocks. She hesitated for a moment before agreeing. The tidal pools were a hit with Naomi, and Ash enjoyed watching her explore them. She would get hyper-focused on trying to catch a crab in one of the pools, or watching one of the smaller fish in them. More than a few times, he let out a laugh at her antics. She apologized to him for not being as interested in magic practice as Phelan and him. Ash waved it off, saying he and Phelan were magic nerds. It was the building block of their relationship. He and Naomi would find their own thing that they shared an interest in. Though he didn't think it would be tidal pools, he did enjoy watching her have fun in them. After she had explored enough of the shoreline, Naomi opened up about her life back on Voss to him. The Frozen River clan had lived in a barren tundra along a river that would freeze for part of the year. The river was life for the clan, providing food and transportation for hunting parties to where game was more plentiful. The land was harsh, and the ocean was something of a myth in the clan, stories told by traders or hunters who followed the river too far. Seeing the ocean and so much life in the tidal pools was just validating the stories she heard as a young girl sitting around the fire. After working up an appetite at the tidal pools, they moved on to their next location, a small restaurant suggested by Celeste that was operated by a Naga family. Naga's lower body was serpent-like, just like their Lamia cousins. The difference is that while Lamia's upper half appeared more human with skin and hair, Naga's upper half tended to have more scales and fins instead of hair. They saw May, the head chef and owner of May's Den, sitting at a table having lunch when they entered.
Ash took that as a sign the food was good. He waved and shot her a smile. That was a mistake, as May stared wide-eyed at him, frozen as the host led them past her table for an empty one in the back. He also saw Jack eating lunch, but didn't wave at him. The second in command of the frozen scales was currently in a deep conversation with a Naga waitress, perhaps one of the daughters of the owner, who was hanging on every word he said. Ash didn't want to interrupt what looked like the beginning of a relationship. The food was good, and the two of them made light conversation while they ate. Their waitress raved about Naomi's makeup and complimented how her scales glittered, which made Naomi blush, especially when Ash agreed with her. The two girls talked for a short while about makeup and found out they were both fans of Coral and her Those Beautiful Scales channel. Naomi and the waitress said their goodbyes to each other as Ash paid the bill. The next stop on the date was a bit of an odd one. A small grocery store. Lily had sent two suggestions to Ash. The first one was for him to win Naomi a prize. Carnival games were a common theme in rom-coms, and Lily said the idea of Naomi's mate overcoming a challenge to gain something for her would be an appealing concept to her salamander culture. The problem was that there were zero arcades in District 114, and, despite the ease of travel, Ash could find no districts hosting festivals or anything that would have prize games, something he noted in his list of economic ideas for District 114. Instead, the only game of chance and skill that gave prizes he could find was a claw machine at a small grocery store. He spent almost as much money on the machine as he had for his and Naomi's lunch, but it was worth it. Naomi's eyes lit up, and she jumped up and down with excitement when he handed her the stuffed crocodile he had won. She immediately named it Crocky and gave Ash a hug and kiss on the cheek for winning him for her. They had just arrived at their last stop on their date, and the other suggestion Lily had. A movie date, which, thankfully, District 114 did have a movie theater. The theater was not an official one and didn't show the latest hit movies. Instead, some locals just cleaned up the old theater, got a digital projector and a popcorn machine, then started playing movies. Ash doubted the owner knew his operation would be illegal back in the States, but DeVos was its own country and played by its own rules. They got a large popcorn to split and two drinks, then made their way into the theater. The movie was the horror classic The Thing and had been Naomi's choice. Lily had introduced the girls to horror movies once they had their fill of rom-coms at the slumber party. They picked some seats in the back where things were more secluded from the other audience members. Ash pulled out his phone, setting it to silent, and showed Naomi how to do the same, explaining it was common courtesy for a movie. The movie was the farthest thing from Ash's mind in the dark theater. He felt Naomi's tail wrap itself around his leg, and she leaned against him, her head resting on his shoulder as she snagged pieces of popcorn from the bucket in his lap. During one of the scenes in the movie that lit up the theater, the two of them caught each other staring at one another. She did look beautiful. Her eyes had a heat to them, and her lips looked incredibly inviting. Ash leaned in and kissed her. Their lips locked, and Naomi drew a sharp breath. Her arms wrapped around him. Soon, the bucket of popcorn was on the floor as the two of them made out in the dark theater. There was enough screaming, yelling, and explosions to muffle out Naomi's soft whimpers and moans. Then, the lights came on, much sooner than expected. Naomi and Ash broke off their makeout session and looked around the theater, trying to figure out why the lights had suddenly been turned on.
"Dear patrons, we have a situation outside. Please remain calm and stay seated. I would like to ask the district boss if he would please join me up front and help aid us in resolving this situation?
A nervous voice echoed over the speakers. Naomi's face was a sad pout, and she gave him a final kiss before releasing his leg from her tail. They stood and Ash took her hand in his. They made their way to the front of the movie theater to see what the situation was that required their attention. It was clear, as soon as they stepped into the lobby. The theater staff was working to barricade the door as strange-looking people tried to force their way in. The group of people was made up of different races, but they all had sickly pale complexions, and many had wounds or missing body parts. The scene looked like something from a zombie movie.
Thank you for coming, District Boss. I apologize for disrupting your movie-going experience, but as you can see, the situation is dire.
An older orc, who Ash guessed was the theater owner, said with a bow. Naomi walked up to an employee who was holding a push broom as a makeshift weapon and took it from him. She unscrewed the base until she had just the handle. She sneered at the mass of people trying to break in.
Damn undead, trying to ruin our date! We were just having the spark between us!
Her magic flared up, and ice started to form on the broom's handle. Soon it was turned into a frozen sword, just a little shorter than Torrent was. Ash had little doubt the ice blade would be a very lethal weapon in Naomi's hands. The theater owner let out a yelp that he tried to cover with a cough.
Of course, we will compensate you for missing out on today's movie and for your assistance with several free tickets. Many wonderful dates soon at our lovely theater,
the owner said with a nervous smile. Ash felt his phone vibrate in his pocket. He thought about ignoring it, but decided against it, as it might be related to the undead. After he pulled the phone out, he noticed it was a group message from Phelan. Phelan.
Necromancer somewhere in the district. Undead are attacking.
This was not an isolated event. The thought made his gut sink, and he wanted to rush to Phelan. He couldn't. Despite how much he wanted to keep his lover safe, he had responsibilities, and she could hold her own. He and Naomi would need to get the other moviegoers and staff somewhere safe. But where? Lily Street. With all Lily's plants there, she could hold off an army. He quickly typed out a reply to the group message. Ash, get everyone you can to Lily Street. Those already there, fortify the place and listen to whatever Lily tells you to do and help with that. Set up an emergency medical station, just in case. Stay safe and don't be reckless. A little hypocritical of him to tell them not to be reckless, given the stunt he pulled back in District 71, but he wanted them safe. He sent a separate text to Phelan. Ash, please stay safe. I love you, Phelan. Get everyone together in Theater 1. Do a head count and compare it to your ticket sales. I want no one left behind. Once Naomi and I clear out the undead, we're moving everyone somewhere safe and we'll be doing it quickly. Ash told the theater owner before looking at those barricading the door. When I tell you to open the door and stay back. Ash's scar lit up from his lightning magic. He caught a few of the staff clearing the barricade, eyes going wide from the sight. He cast a glance at Naomi. He didn't need to tell her anything. She had her sword ready to dash in.
Now, open the door!
The door swung open, and the undead tried to push through all at once. The sound of thunder boomed in the theater's lobby as Ash unleashed his bolt. His elemental scar made the spell powerful enough that it was no longer silent. Three zombies were blown apart by the spell, creating a gap in the mass of bodies trying to enter. Naomi raced into this gap with her sword ready. Ash followed behind her with his lightning claw active.
Close the door when we're out!
He shouted to the staff. Naomi hacked at the undead with her ice sword as he slashed with his lightning claw. Together, they made a path through the undead bodies into the street. There were about 20 zombies pressed against the building entrance that turned to pursue him. Had they tried to face them at the entrance, The zombies might have been a challenge. Out in the street, though, where they had room to maneuver, the undead were little more than moving targets. Naomi laid down a sheet of ice, leaving only a small pathway clear. The ice caused them to fall, unless they took the cleared path where she was ready for them with her sword. Ash was darting in and out of the small groups of undead with his lightning claw, taking out a leg to cripple a zombie, or, if the opportunity presented itself, a strike at the head to kill them. He was now noticing a decent portion of the zombies were frost trolls. He doubted that was a coincidence. As they were finishing off the last of the zombies, the people started to make their way out of the theater. The moviegoers cast fearful and disgusted looks at the butchered remains of the zombies. The staff, though, just gave him and Naomi wide-eyed stares. Their fight with the zombies had left an impression on them. The sound of scraping drew his attention away from the mass of people. A hulking, headless undead was approaching them, dragging a large, crude sword behind it, making a scraping sound against the road. The rotting brute held a blood-stained bag in its right hand.
"That's a Doulahan, one of the greater undead. It will be tougher than the zombies,"
Naomi said as she readied her broom-handle ice sword. "Naomi, get these people to Lily Street. I'll hold the Doulahan off." She didn't argue. Instead, she gave a nod, then grabbed his shirt, pulling him to her. She deeply kissed him.
"Be safe. Run if you must. I will get my sword and come find you if you do not join us there soon,"
Naomi said, before calling to the crowd of people. "Follow me!" Ash pulled on his magic and ready a bolt. The zombie frost trolls they had already taken down gave him a good idea who this Doulahan had been before the necromancer gave it an undead life. Even headless, Ash recognized the corpse. He thought he would only face Sarrow again in his nightmares. Chapter 26. Ray laughed maniacally as Phelan threw an earth spike at her head. The spike struck its target, only for Ray's head to turn into a wisp of black smoke before reforming and continuing her laughter. Phelan sneered at Ray. It was just her luck the necromancer brought the bitch back as a wraith. They were a troublesome greater undead. Phelan was either going to need to keep hitting her until she ran out of magic and could not reform, or get her hand on salt or iron, which would slow down her recovery. Black smoke billowed off of Ray's hand, and she charged. The black smoke formed long, sword-like claws at the end of Ray's fingers and stabbed at Phelan. Phelan jumped out of the way, the shadow claws striking the ground where she had been. Pulling on her fire magic, Phelan sent a blazing wall up where Ray stood. However, all that earned her was a grunt from the wraith as she reformed a few feet away, smiling.
"Pulling out your secret fire magic against me. Guess I do have you on the ropes, Fay,"
Ray grinned. Phelan spared a glance at Luna and Brooke since Ray was gloating. Linda ran the first chance she got, despite all the talk about redemption from her. Brooke, though, was backing up Luna, and the two of them were fighting off a few zombies Ray had brought with her. Brooke was armed with the pry bar Cole had, while Luna used a folding knife she carried and had already decapitated the zombified Bruce. The two of them had things under control, as long as Ray didn't join in.
"Not really, just worried you might have caught something from fucking all those trolls,"
Phelan said with a grin of her own. The plan was to antagonize Ray and keep her focus on her. Ray stared at her for a moment, then snarled.
"Bitch! You went through my stuff, didn't you?"
Phelan laughed. It was forced, but she doubted Ray noticed.
"You always did claim you could take on three guys at once."
Ray's face looked as if it would have turned bright red had she not been undead.
I was going to kill you slowly. Now I'm going to make you watch as I kill everyone you know,
Ray snarled.
Only when you have nothing left and beg me will I end you, Phelan.
Ray did her shadow claw attack again. Phelan suspected, since she didn't use magic while alive, it was the only spell she had figured out since becoming a greater undead. Still, Ray was an experienced fighter, as Phelan was reminded. She dodged the claw again, only for Ray to shift into a kick that caught her in the ribs. Phelan flinched, and was sure one or two now had a fracture in them. She threw a wall of fire, with a pillar of earth hidden inside it as a shield when she got space from Ray. It was a good thing she did, as Ray followed up with her shadow claw, heedless of the firewall. Had the pillar of earth magic not been there, Phelan would have taken the shadow claw in the gut.
Oh, did that hurt?
Ray taunted. A knife whipped through the air and stuck itself into Ray's head through her temple. Her head went with the momentum and flopped to the side. She went cross-eyed for a moment. Then her head became a billow of black smoke, the knife falling to the ground as her head reformed. She had a small scar, even after reforming, where the blade had struck her. Steel would hurt her, but not as much as iron would. Ray looked towards Luna, who had thrown the blade. Her sister stood her ground and stared down the wraith. Phelan would have been proud of her sister if that wasn't the stupidest thing she could have done.
Are you ready to watch your sister die, Fay?
The shadow claws formed on Ray's hand as she charged at Luna. Phelan pulled on her magic to throw an earth spike or conjure an earthen wall between Ray and Luna, but she knew deep down there was not enough time for her to do so. Luna stood her ground fearlessly, but she didn't make any moves to fight. Luna was nonplussed as Ray drew closer to her. The only movement she made was to flick her hand up right before Ray got to her. Another knife embedded itself into Ray's forehead. As before, there was a moment where the steel damaged her, and her head whipped back as she was briefly incapacitated. Luna quickly sidestepped Ray, grabbed her, and shoved her down an exposed manhole that she had been standing in front of. Brooke rushed over and helped her push the cover back over the hole. They were a lot heavier than the movies always depicted.
You okay, sis?
Luna called out.
Yeah, just a mini heart attack from your crazy plan,
Phelan frowned. Luna just smiled at her and pointed at the manhole cover. A muffled Ray yelled curses and obscenities at them.
Those covers are mostly iron. They will zap too much strength for her to be able to move them,
Luna laughed.
That talking corpse is going to have to wander around the sewers until she finds a way out.
Brooke leaned against the pry bar that had served as her weapon. She was catching her breath and looked ragged.
What do we do now?
She asked. Luna pulled out her phone. Phelan had felt hers go off during the fight. Maybe someone had responded to her group message.
Sis, your lover boy has a plan of action,
Luna smirked. And there was the ego Luna always got when one of her plans worked. One of the reasons Phelan seldom praised her for them, even if they were good ones. Rolling her eyes at her sister, she pulled out her phone. She had two messages, both from Ash. The first message said to meet up at Lily Street and rescue anyone they could on the way. Good plan. Regroup somewhere that will be a safe place for non-combatants and form a counterattack to take out the necromancer. The second message was also from Ash, but was not sent to the group. Ash, please stay safe. I love you, Phelan. Phelan's heart skipped a beat as she read it. If Naomi didn't drag Ash to bed tonight, then she was. Phelan grimaced as she took a deep breath.
Well, she would if her ribs healed fast enough.
All right, let's go,
Phelan said to Brooke and Luna.
Bye, Ray! Have fun swimming in shit!
Luna shouted at the manhole cover with a laugh. Ray replied with a muffled yell that sounded like a fuck you. Asphalt exploded into the air as the oversized, crude blade struck the road. Sarah, as a Doulahan, was deceptively quick, having shifted from dragging the blade in a slow stagger to an overhead strike in the blink of an eye. While it had power and speed, its accuracy was piss poor, not surprising for something wielded by someone without a head. The blade would have missed Ash by a good foot, even if he had not put distance between him and the monster. He let a bolt fly at the behemoth of a corpse, striking it in the chest. The blow knocked it back a few steps, leaving a decent-sized gash where the lightning had ruptured and burned the flesh, only for black smoke to bellow out of the wound a second later. Ash watched as it healed to little more than a scratch.
Okay, I see why Naomi suggested running. A lot tougher than the zombies.
Well, tough is good. Time to see what this elemental scar can do,
Ash said to himself. He doubted Sarah could hear without a head, though he was targeting him somehow. He flooded his body with magic using Ember's body enhancement technique, feeling it gather in his muscles and bones, strengthening and reinforcing them. He then activated Lightning Claw. The air crackled as the currents of electricity jumped between his fingers. The headless Sarrow swung his sword towards him. As before, he was easily able to sidestep it, and the blade missed him. Ash rushed Sarrow, his lightning claw striking the greater undead's leg, and the currents of electricity dropped him to his knees. Ash slipped behind him and started slashing away at his back with his lightning claw. Billows of black smoke started to engulf him. When Sarrow started to get back on his feet, Ash backed off. The Doulahan threw the blade wide in a slash, which Ash knew he was out of range from. Only, Sarrow released the blade, sending it hurling towards Ash. He had to throw himself to the ground to avoid the giant spinning blade, which tore through a street lamp and a postal box that was behind him. He heard Sarrow's heavy footsteps as he rushed towards him. Rolling, he avoided a stomp from the oversized troll that would have crushed his head. The attack had been a lot more accurate than what the troll had shown earlier, though there was always the chance he had gotten lucky. Ash doubted that. Sarrow held up the bloody bag in his hand like someone would a lantern. He had been wondering what purpose it served for the greater undead. Figuring it was worth a shot, or at least could serve as a distraction, Ash readied a bolt as he rolled from Sarrow's stomping feet. The bolt struck the bloody canvas bag, exploding it and the hand that had been holding it. Bloody chunks of what looked like hair fell to the ground. Ash grimaced at the sight. The bag had held Sarrow's head, or at least what was left of it. Sarrow stopped attacking Ash. Scooping up the remains of his head became his only priority. Ash stood back up and went over to the giant, crude blade. He was able to lift it thanks to the body enhancement. Otherwise, he doubted he could do more than drag the blade behind him. Pumping it full of lightning magic, he approached the crouched Sarrow, still scraping his head off the pavement. Ash raised the blade over his head and cleaved it into Sarrow's neck stump, embedding the blade. Still holding the blade, he used the hunk of steel to send bolt after bolt into the headless monster. The billowing black smoke stopped after the fifth bolt, and Sarrow collapsed on top of the bloody mess that was his head. The bolts had blown up Sarrow's left arm and a portion of the left side of his chest. Ash kicked the now unmoving Saro.
Stay out of my district and out of my dreams!
He turned and started making his way towards Lily Street, hoping to meet up with Phelan, Naomi, and the rest of his friends there. He had already recovered a portion of his magic used fighting Saro by the time he encountered more zombies. Three of them huddled over a screaming woman in a side alley. Ash rushed in and took all of them out with a lightning claw before they even knew he was there.
Hey, are you all right?
He asked the lynxkin who the zombies had been attacking. She looked at him but was still trembling and curled up in the fetal position. He could see she was covered in scratches and bite marks. Even Ash knew that, unlike in the Bee movies, a bite from a real zombie wouldn't turn someone into one. However, if they manage to kill you, then you become one. Her worst injury was a rather nasty bite on her calf, where the zombies had taken a chunk of flesh. Tearing the sleeve from his shirt, he did his best to bandage it.
Don't worry. I am going to get you out of here, but I'll need you to help me, okay?
He asked, trying to make his voice sound calm and reassuring. She gave a small nod to him.
Okay, good. My name is Ash. What's yours?
Linda,
she said softly.
Okay, Linda. I don't think you can walk with your leg as it is, so I'm going to piggyback you to Lily Street where it's safe. I just need you to hold on to me, okay?
She gave him another nod, and soon she was clinging to his back. Linda was pretty light, but he still pulled on the body enhancement and flooded his muscles with magic. Best to be able to react quickly in case of attacks. After all, there were more than just zombies wandering around. They were halfway to Lily Street before Ash was forced to fight again. This time, about a dozen zombies were trying to break into May's den. One of the windows was already broken, and Ash could make out what looked like a wooden barricade in its place, which the zombies seem intent on demolishing.
Hey, Linda, cover your ears, Ash requested.
He felt her shift as she pressed her body against his back to free her hands. The unintended side effect was her breasts were now pressed against him. He pushed the thoughts about that fact out of his head and focused on the zombies before him. There was a reason for his warning. The zombies were tightly packed together, and if he boosted his bolt with extra magic, he could take out a few zombies with each cast of the spell. He released the first bolt, targeting the cluster of zombies trying to break the wooden barricade. The sound of thunder echoed around them as it hit. Chapter 27 May knew today was going to be a shitty day. She found an infestation of mites in her garden box this morning, and later had the misfortune of running into the district boss at lunch. Memories of the night he visited her restaurant flooded back, and she was too distressed to enjoy her meal. Then, when she arrived at work, she learned one of the stoves was on the fritz. So, overall, a shitty day. Now, the day had progressed from shitty to a living nightmare, and she was sure she would not live to see the end of it. Zombies had appeared out of nowhere and trapped them inside her restaurant. One had even broken a window and tried crawling inside. Thankfully, Maggie was able to take care of it with a meat cleaver, and Jessie was working with a few of the diners to barricade the rest of the windows. Her staff and the braver diners had armed themselves with whatever they could find in the restaurant. May herself was carrying around a large carving knife and a pan she hoped could be used as an emergency shield. She heard crying, a child of one of the diners, no doubt. Saro would be doing her best to try and comfort the kid. She had been working to keep them distracted in this dire situation, even snagging crayons and paper for them to play with. Saro stood in the center of them with a forced smile on her face asking them about their pictures and doing her best to not show fear. Thunder echoed outside the restaurant. It sounded close.
"Maybe if it starts pouring down rain, the zombies will leave us alone," Maggie suggested with hope.
She still clutched the meat cleaver with both hands in front of her. Her cattail and ears frizzed out, showing how frayed her nerves were. The thunder sounded a few more times, then silence. Even the scratching at the barricades by the zombies was gone.
"Is everyone all right in there?"
a voice called out with a knock on the barricade.
"Yes!"
Maggie shouted as she and the others started removing the barricade. May knew that Maggie's outcry wasn't an answer to the question, just relief that it was over. May herself felt a wave of dread leaving her body at the sound of the voice. As the barricade fell, they saw the owner of the voice and the remains of the zombies that had been trying to break in. The district boss stood there with a lynx skin clinging to his back. His face was etched with concern as he looked them over. The smoldering zombies lay in pieces on the ground not far from him. Jesse froze once he realized who was on the other side of the barricade, almost as if he was considering whether the district boss was more dangerous than the zombies. May stepped forward before he could do something stupid and finished pulling down the barricade. That drew the attention of the district boss.
"Chef May, how many people are in your restaurant?"
Her rabbitkin instincts started screaming at her for drawing attention to herself.
31 people, counting staff and diners, 7 of which are children. We do a casual family special earlier in the day, more affordable, something the restaurant I trained at would do."
She was unsure why she told him that last part, her nerves, perhaps. He grimaced and looked at the butchered zombies around him.
"Anyone hurt?"
he asked. May shook her head.
"One broke in, but Maggie, my sous chef, was able to stop it before anyone got hurt."
She nodded in Maggie's direction when she said her name.
"Damn, with a meat cleaver? That's pretty badass."
Maggie blushed while tucking a stray hair behind her feline ear.
"Thank you, district boss."
He shifted uncomfortably before smiling at Maggie.
"Just call me Ash. Honestly, I'm still getting used to this district boss thing."
Then he turned and looked at May.
"Still, I am the boss, and this district and its people are my responsibility. I'm taking everyone here somewhere they will be safe until we take care of the necromancer causing all of this."
"Where in the district is safe?"
one of the diners asked.
"Lily Street. Message anyone you know to either get there or barricade up and let you know where they are. Once I get there, I plan to organize rescue efforts."
Lily Street. Who in their right mind would consider that the safest place in the district? May would rate it as the most dangerous. The whole street was a dryad's territory. Every plant was potential death. Many others seemed to share her opinion, as a look of apprehension took hold over them. This was not missed by the district boss, or Ash, as he had requested to be called. He gave them a stern look.
"You're welcome to take your chances. I won't force anyone to come with me, but worse things are roaming around than zombies. I fought a Doulahan before coming here,"
Ash said as he set the lynxkin in a chair. The wound on her leg was already bleeding through the makeshift bandage. May's blood chilled. She heard a loud clang as Maggie dropped her meat cleaver on the floor and was now sitting in a chair. She was visibly pale at the news, as was many others. A meat cleaver had worked against a zombie, but it would be useless against a greater undead like a Doulahan. A greater undead would tear apart any one of them with ease, and they wouldn't be able to leave even a single scratch on it. Only salt and iron had any lasting effects.
"Jesse!"
May called.
"Grab some help and gather all our iron cookware and any salt!"
She turned and looked at Ash, doing her best to harden her gaze. Her instincts were telling her to run and hide, to survive at all costs. To hell with her instincts. She had carved a life for herself in District 114, made friends, built a business, and gained respect. She wouldn't let some corpses take that from her.
Any orc worth their weight can build a forge. If there are any at Lily Street, we can get a forge going and turn the iron cookware into weapons. Failing that, we can at least coat weapons in salt.
A grin spread on Ash's face as he pulled out his phone, typing a message. He smiled at her after he hit send.
Good thinking, Chef May. I've already got some people working on the forge.
They were ready to leave for Lily Street a few minutes later. Jesse had managed to find all the iron cookware, and almost everyone was now carrying at least one. Ash had used the time and the restaurant's first aid kit to better treat Linda's wounds, his lynxkin backpack. They left May's restaurant in an organized group. Ash led, with Maggie on the right and May on the left, guarding the sides of the group. Jesse guarded the back with a diner who volunteered. The center had Sarah watching over the children and the rest of the diners or less combat-capable staff surrounding them. The children held each other's hands and closed their eyes as Sarah led them past the remains of the zombies outside the restaurant. May wished she could close her eyes and walk past them too. A dozen bodies were blown to pieces and still smoldering. The air had a sickly sweet smell of cooked, tainted meat. Others were looking at the scene before them as they left the restaurant. Their faces told her they thought the same thing. There had not been a fight between Ash and the zombies. Just a massacre. They only encountered a few zombies on their way to Lily Street. Mostly small groups or individuals that Ash took care of by shooting his lightning at them or engaging in melee with his hands dancing with electricity. Every time, the scar on his face would glow blue, and May could feel static in the air. A collective gasp escaped the group as they neared Lily Street. May had only seen such sights in her nightmares, born from the stories she'd been told as a child back on Voss. Warnings of what would happen if one was foolish enough to venture into a dryad's territory. Ash just looked at the sight before them and smiled.
"Looks like Lily is in full swing," he said, far too calmly.
Long vines climbed into the air around Lily Street, lashing out and tearing apart anything that got within their range. A few piles of dismembered zombies near the street were a testament to their lethality. Everyone froze except for Ash, who kept walking. He turned and raised an eyebrow at them when he noticed. May pushed against her instincts, telling her to run, and was the first of the group to start moving forward, followed by Maggie. The two of them stood beside Ash as he walked to the street and in range of the vines. The rest of their group followed slowly behind, as if to allow enough time to escape, should the vines attack May, Maggie, or Ash.
"Hey, big boss! Glad you finally showed!"
A snow mink woman called out with a wave at them. May recognized her from the restaurant as one of the 114 pack captains. Ash smiled and waved back at her. That was when May really took in the street, apart from the vines that had held her attention. The street had been fortified with a 4-foot-high earthen wall. Armed lizardkins and beastkins stood behind it, watching for any zombies lucky enough to make it past the vines.
"Hey, Celeste, I've got an injured lynxkin here. Nothing life-threatening, just a nasty bite. Don't think she can walk on it."
May watched as Linda tried to hide her face in Ash's shoulder. She wasn't sure why she was doing it, almost as if she was worried Celeste would recognize her.
"Gotcha! I'll get the 114 pack's new probational member to run her to the medical station. We've set one up at Lily's shop,"
Celeste replied as a jackalkin woman slipped past the earthen walls and started approaching Ash. Linda? The Jackalkin asked as she got closer.
Brooke? You're alive?
Linda gasped before she burst into tears.
I'm so sorry. I was just so scared, and I ran.
Enough, Waterworks. You're in worse shape than any of us. Now let's get you to the medical station,
Brooke said as she helped Linda stand. Leaning heavily on her, the two of them started making their way past the barricade. They talked softly to each other, and May was sure she only heard them due to how sensitive Rabbitkin ears were.
So, did I hear right? You're a member of the 114 pack again?
Linda asked hesitantly.
Probational member. When you ran, I stayed and fought. Phelan gave me a second chance because of that. I'm not going to let her down, Brooke said with determination as she supported Linda.
The snow mink named Celeste approached Ash and May as soon as their group made it past the earthen walls. She smiled at all the iron cookware they had with them.
Good call on bringing all the iron. The gangs can easily handle zombies, but wraiths and doula hands would be impossible for them to take down without the stuff. We scrounged around but could only find a few things made of iron instead of steel.
Ash gestured in May's direction.
It was Chef May's idea.
He gave her that smile of his. She had her restaurant pretty well organized and defended when I arrived. Her sous chef Maggie even took out a zombie with a meat cleaver. Celeste hummed.
Chef May and sous chef Maggie, huh? We'll need to talk later. The pack is always on the lookout for talent.
May saw a small smile appear on Maggie's face. Of course, the predator beastkin would be excited about joining a gang. Celeste saw her reaction as well and had a small victory smirk. May's mind just reeled with thoughts of her decked out like a gangster and the horrible tasks Phelan, Celeste, or district boss Ash would have her do.
Oh, a rival district is plotting to steal from us? Take their boss's head and send in the rabbit as well. She needs to be blooded.
She pictured her and Maggie cleaning their blood-covered weapons in a warehouse surrounded by the bodies of a rival district's gang.
She had no fear, no anxiousness, just a cold steel gaze as she used the shirt of a dead predator to clean her blade.
This version of her looked at killing as May looked at processing a slab of beef. The thought was both terrifying and alluring.
So, who tangled with the wraith? Ash asked Celeste, breaking May from her thoughts.
I did, a voice called out.
Phelan and the swordswoman who led the frozen scales made their way to them. The swordswoman wore a beaming smile that May felt did not fit the seriousness of the situation the district was in. Phelan's face was more neutral, but she quickly made her way towards Ash.
Phelan wrapped her arms around Ash and buried her face in his chest.
She stood there just holding him for a moment, before looking up at him with narrowed eyes.
You smell like a cat.
Phelan shifted so she could peer at Maggie with narrowed eyes. Maggie let out a small yelp, and her tail and ears frizzed. Celeste let out a sigh.
Ugh, way to kill my sales pitch, boss.
Celeste grumbled. Phelan ignored her and instead proceeded to rub her face against Ash's chest. The swordswoman watched Phelan anxiously, fidgeting with her hands. Finally, Phelan stopped and took a deep breath of Ash's scent.
Much better.
Phelan stood on her tiptoes and kissed Ash deeply. Then she whispered something into his ear that made him blush and smile. Once again, May was sure she was the only one that had overheard what was said due to her rabbitkin ears.
I love you too.
Finally, Phelan broke her hold on Ash, and the swordswoman rushed forward, wrapping her body around him. Her tail coiled around his leg so he could not escape her even if he wanted to. She clung tightly to him.
I'm so glad you are okay. I'm sorry about our date. We were having our spark. Phelan explained the Chekhov rain to me, and I eagerly await our next one.
Celeste approached May with a smile.
Right, they might be at this for...